Hey, body man of God, do you love your wife but sometimes struggle living with her? You know what I mean. You're loving each other one moment and then you're arguing the next. And deep down inside, don't you wish your marriage could be easier? Well, it can be, and we want to help you. On Saturday, June 29th, the Marriage Seekers for Men Boot Camp will be coming to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and you don't want to miss it. From 8 to 2 p.m., you're going to learn simple, proven, practical ways to get along better with your wife, make your marriage easier, avoid unnecessary conflicts and arguments, and even have more sex. That's right, you heard me, I said it, and we're even guaranteeing the results. This is the first ever marriage seminar for men only. So if you live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, or even in the surrounding areas, make sure you register for this event before June 29th or before we sell out, because seating is limited. So to sign up and reserve your spot and take advantage of the early registration discount, go to marriagesecretsformen.com. That's marriagesecretsformen.com. Hey, Mighty Warrior, doing the recording of this particular episode, there was an audio glitch in one of the guests' microphone. Now, our sound guy was unable to fix and remove it, so we apologize for that. Now, our only option was not to air the episode. But after you hear this interview, you'll be glad that we didn't. The information shared by Brian and Jeff was just too good not to use. So please excuse the audio glitch in Brian's microphone and enjoy my interview with both Brian and Jeff Becker.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplishment of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. Each interview session is packed with proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. And guys, today we have with us two guests on the show, not just one, two for the price of one, Brian and Jeff Becker. And they're a father and son duo who are also co-authors of the book Tender Lions, Building the Vital Relationship Between Father and Son. And since there's two of them on the show today, I'll start by giving honor to the elder by introducing you to Brian first. And Brian Becker has had a varied career as an educator. So he's a fellow educator like I was. He's also a business owner and a nonprofit executive for 20 years. And today, Brian consults with companies and nonprofits to improve their overall culture, quality, and performance. He also provides leadership coaching to executives and aspiring leaders. He's a frequent workshop leader and conference speaker, having delivered more than 1,000 presentations in the last 25 years throughout the United States, as well as in Canada, England, Singapore, South America, and Puerto Rico. And Brian lives in Maywood, Illinois, and has been married for 35 years. And together, he and his wife, Kim, have two adult children, including Jeff, and one grandchild. And that kind of transitions me to introduce you to his son, Jeff. Jeff is a man on a mission to serve and develop the best in others. And he does this primarily through the sports of basketball. And Jeff organized and led his first basketball camp, check this out, when he was only in the seventh grade. And today, Jeff is the co-founder and director of Powerhouse Hoops, a nationally known basketball academy in Phoenix, Arizona, which strives to develop character in young men through basketball. And in his free time, Jeff stresses the importance of giving back to the local community through servant leadership. And he frequently volunteers at local youth facilities and group homes around the greater Phoenix area and resides in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I invited Brian and Jeff on the show today to talk to us about their book, Tender Lions. And I can't wait, because I think the only thing better than having a great father on the podcast is having his son to join him. And being a father of a 23-year-old son myself, I can't wait to talk to the both of them about their book. So, guys, welcome to the show. Welcome to Real Men Connect.
Thanks so much, Joe. It's great to be with you.
Thanks so much.
All right, and I'm hoping that as we talk, guys, they'll be able to distinguish your voices on who is Brian and who is Jeff. They'll get it. At least in the book, you guys make the clear distinction when you're reading the book who's talking. But they're going to get to know you guys very well during this show. Before we came on the air, I told you that more than likely I'm not going to get through all the questions I want. But I'm praying that God gives us some grace and mercy, because I really would love to ask all of these questions, because I think they're going to bless the men today. But Brian, let's just jump right to it, man. We're going to start with you first, being the father. And I always ask men to give us their favorite Bible verse on what gives them inspiration from the Word of God. In this season in your life, Brian, what has been your anchor verse, man?
In the recent months, by the way, Joe, thanks so much for having Jeff and I on. We're just really excited to be able to talk with you and your audience about the importance of father-son relationships. But to answer your question, Acts 13:22, Paul is referencing the Old Testament, where he says, God said, I have found David, son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. I found David, a man after my own heart. And that story speaks really clearly to me, because David was a guy who, he made a lot of mistakes in his life, a lot of errors. And God still used him in really powerful ways. And I think about my own life and how when I got honest about a lot of the errors I had made, that God intends to use all of that bad for good now as I go forward.
Yeah, that is great, Brian. And Jeff, what about for you, man? What's been your go-to Bible verse this season in your life?
You know, the go-to has always been Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, said the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and future. And, you know, I'm one that truly believe that there's everything happens for a reason, and there's truly a plan, a purpose, hope and a future that we might not know this instant what it is, but there is a path that God is guiding us through.
Good stuff, man. You know, guys, I told you before we came on the air that I had a chance to read your book. And you can imagine doing a show like this. I joke a lot with my friends in the disciple groups I'm in here that I never have to buy another book as long as I live. Because I get people, publishers and people and authors send me books all the time. But I love it because I love to read. And I got to make a confession. When I was reading your book, you know, typically I go through the book, and as I'm reading, I'm praying. I say, God, what questions do I think they'll be burning on men's hearts? What should I ask? And I got to tell you guys, this is probably one of the easiest times I've ever had coming up with questions. That's why I know I'm not going to have time to ask all of them. They just started coming. And I guess maybe because this hits close to home, because I am a father of a 23-year-old, and my son and I are really, really close. And I've watched him mature into manhood. And of course, you know, Brian, as you look back, you always think, no matter what they tell you, you always think you could have done some things differently and do some things better. And so this is really close to me. And I'm hoping that I don't get too selfish and monopolize the conversation by asking only the questions that are burning in my heart. But I'm hopefully going to give insight and perspective to the men who really need this stuff the most. So, Brian, we're going to start with you, man. To write a book with your son is an amazing accomplishment. And I've even written or co-authored at least 12 books, and I've never written one for my son. I've written them for him, but not with him. And so to me, I'm just impressed that you guys were able to accomplish that feat, because that means you must first have built a relationship with your son in order to do that. And we know from the statistics that most fathers don't. So I want to start with your story, Brian, and your relationship with your father growing up. What was that like, man?
My dad was a complicated guy. You know, on one side of the coin, he was very serious about his faith. He prayed. He read the Bible. He did devotions with me and my brother and sister and my mom. Very honest man. He's a farmer his entire life. On the other side of the coin, he was a man with very short views and a very big temper. So when I was a little kid, there were a lot of days when I was afraid of him, you know, and as I got older, adolescence and my teen years, that fear turned into anger at him. And so it was complicated. And throughout the early part of my life, it was a really challenging relationship. And I know that was a part of what caused a lot of unrest in me as a young man.
You know, and again, that's what I mean. I didn't have this question asked, but just as a follow up question, because you said you described your father as a complicated man. You said, but he was a man of faith. but yet he had a short fuse, and that made you afraid of him, and then it turned into anger. And I can relate to I would describe myself as being the same way, that a man of faith, but I used to have a very, very short fuse too. And I want you to help us, and I'm thinking men who walk that path like your dad, understand ourselves a little bit better. What do you think that comes from? If we're strong in our faith, how can we also at the same time have a short fuse? They seem to be not congruent. How can you explain that from now being a dad yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I the first thing that comes to mind is that verse about how I don't do what I want to do and I do what I don't want to do. And so it's like this inner battle that just goes on day in and day out. And it still does for me. I'm in a really different place than I was 30 years ago. But I think almost every man that I know well really battles with something on the inside, whether it's anger or fear or jealousy or greed or, you know. And so there's like the devil loves that. And so it's something that we wrestle with all the time.
All right. And Jeff, let's bring you into the conversation, man. Obviously, you and your dad have a strong relationship now. But what was it like for you growing up with Brian?
You know, my dad, and we talk about it a lot now, is he lived a double life. And for, you know, the first 14, 15 years of my life, I didn't know. I didn't know the secrets or the demons that were inside of him. And I thought it was, you know, the American dream, the, you know, perfect world where my father was a part of the community, a part of the church, a man of faith, bringing me to church and Sunday schools and playing catch with me outside and, you know, shooting hoops. And he dropped this bomb on us, and it totally, it changed my perspective. And then through a lot of hard work, a lot of communication, deep conversations for years, we built that brick by brick, conversation by conversation, back up to where it is today.
You know, you mentioned in the book, you said you kind of felt your life was in a bubble when you were at that age. And I could relate so much to reading the book, because my son, when he realized that I was living a double life too, he was a little bit younger than you were, but he still understood what was going on, that, wow, this is not the family I thought I had. Everything seemed to be normal on the surface. But before we get into this, because Brian, I know you're going to tell us more about that, about what happened. But Brian, whose idea was it to write Tender Lions, and what made you think it would be better to write the book together with Jeff as opposed to just doing the book solo?
Well, maybe half a dozen years ago, I was working for a foundation at that time, a grant-making organization. And it was part of my job to read every proposal that came to us from these nonprofit organizations. They were faith-based organizations, agencies, congregations that were really trying to solve community problems, you know, domestic violence, gangs, homelessness, really thorny issues. And one day I was sitting at my desk, I'd read dozens of proposals, and I don't know whether this was my intuition or it was an angel or the Holy Spirit or whatever, but I stood up at my desk and I said out loud, "There are no dads in any of these pictures. In all of these proposals I've read, there are no healthy fathers. And if there is a dad in the picture, he's probably the destructive element in that story." And then, Joe, my mind jumped back about 15 years, because I was the destructive element in my own family. I had a job where I traveled too much. I partied too much. I got involved with pornography as a young guy. I started crossing boundaries, to the point, boundary after boundary, that I was hating myself more and more, but I couldn't get a grip on that. And eventually, I had a moral failure in my marriage, and that, you know, that just ripped me up on the inside. And so I was, on the outside, I had this great game face, but on the inside, I was crumbling.
You know, and I read in your intro, Brian, that you had a background like me in education. And in your book, you mentioned this about working for that, I guess it was a foundation or whatever, that would fund some of these nonprofit organizations. For me, the light bulb went off when I was consulting and working in education, when I realized that the fathers were missing. And the kids who were having the most problems, it was missing in their lives. So whenever they would bring me in to work with the quote, at-risk kids, the ones who were causing the most trouble, whether it be gang banging, gang violence, drugs, cutting, you name it. God revealed to me at a second that I even asked a question, how many of you have a male in your home that you respect and admire? And I'm telling you, across the board, and when I started asking those questions, less than 1%. And that's when I'm like, how stupid, how slow could I be not to grasp that, that the absence of the father is precipitating all of these problems in the home. And that's what kind of led me to leave education to work in men's ministry full time. So I could relate to that when you were citing that in the book. But Jeff, let me ask you this, man. When Brian approached you about participating in this book, what were your thoughts, man? Be real. Tell us the truth. What were you thinking?
You know, honestly, it was, he's been hinting that he'd been wanting to do something like this for a while. And it was kind of a, oh, here we go. And
what do you mean by here we go? What does
just,
that mean?
Just kind of a, dad has another idea. you know, but it has been such a fun, just a fun journey for the past, you know, 2-3 years to tell stories, to talk to each other more than we probably ever would have. I think our relationship is closer than ever. Just the bond and just our relationship is great. But it's interesting how through the years, you know, we've talked about stories that I remember compared to what he remembers. And he had no idea that I remember something so insignificant to him or vice versa. You know, in one of the chapters, it talks about time matters. And you know, it truly is important that everything you do with your father or son or any relationship, that time truly does matter and how you engage with that individual.
Mm-hmm. Can I add just a little
bit
to that, Joe?
Go ahead, man.
So back when Jeff was a young teenager, when I finally revealed to my family about the depths of the mistakes I'd made, I saw Jeff go from being this, you know, open and trusting young guy to being really angry at me for good reasons, because I hurt his mom and him and his sister badly. I saw him become scared because he's like, oh my gosh, my family is upside down. Are they going to get divorced? Are we going to move? Am I going to change schools? All my friends are going to find out about this. And then he got isolated, really quiet, really went inward. And I think those three things, being angry, being afraid, and being isolated, is what happens to millions of young men today. And boy, that's a recipe for danger. Fortunately, Jeff turned most of his efforts towards sports and not towards gangs or drugs or whatever, which is really prevalent in the community where Jeff was raised.
Yeah, what a blessing in God's grace showing itself there. You know, as you guys, and I'm looking at this book that you guys put together, and I'm saying to myself, what a great legacy. I've written books for my son to pass down because something ever happened to me. He knew, you know, he's older now, so he can understand now a lot of my beliefs and some of the mistakes I made. But when he was younger, I wrote books for him. So just in case something happened to me before he would reach adulthood. And I thought, wow, what a great legacy to leave behind. But what you guys have done, man, not only are you leaving a legacy for Jeff and his future kids and generations come, but you guys did it together. And what a blessing, man. I just think that's so awesome.
It has been good. We sat for days about 3 years ago and said, if we could wind the clock back and raise a boy to become a man, what would be the most important things that we would do? And that's how the chapters evolved, was through all
really?
Of those conversations. Wow. Yeah. I mean, we're not researchers. We're not PhDs in child psychology. We're two guys who spend most of our working hours, Jeff with young men and me with adults, on the whole leadership field. And Jeff does it through sports and I do it through business.
You know, I think maybe that's why the book is such an easy read and so enjoyable to read, because it just seems so relatable. And so what you're telling me is that because you didn't follow the scientific method for writing a book like that. So
we actually look for the research to support our premise, our perspective, hopefully being able to find researchers or someone. And we found an awful lot of information. Jeff, do you have some of those stats handy about fatherlessness?
I do. And it, you know, Joe, it started as just a father-son relationship and our story, just personal story. And the more we looked at the stats, it was extremely eye-opening, you know, as we looked into fatherlessness. And, you know, so a few of the very scary stats, you know, as we look at fatherlessness, and we talked about it earlier, is, you know, 71% of high school dropouts do not have a father in the home, and 71% of teen pregnancies, 85% of children with behavioral disorders are correlated to fatherlessness, and 90% of homeless or runaway children. So we looked at these stats, and we never knew it was this bad, or almost an epidemic, you could say. So we knew that we were onto something, just not our story, but trying to relate and trying to get this news out to anyone and everyone that could listen.
And Jeff, you mentioned in the book too, that because that you felt that you lived in a bubble, you say that in your own words, that you didn't appreciate having both parents in the home because you're so used to it. It was the normal thing for you. And to give you the flip side of that is that I only knew one married couple. I only met one married couple until I was 18 years old. And they had a dysfunctional marriage. And so I was never around married people. So I thought the norm was a broken home. And so you don't know what you don't know, you know, which is the scary part of it. But I mean, there's so many other questions I want to get to. But Brian, I want to share an excerpt from the book. And it's starting beginning chapter one, which I thought, what a great way to open the book to grab the reader's attention. You call the chapter The Storm. I want to share this with the listeners, because I think a lot of men, unfortunately, can relate to this. At least I knew I could, and I can't be the only one, because obviously, Brian, you just you wrote it, and sure, I can relate to it. So I'm sure there's some other men who can relate to it, and I want you to explain it to them, or at least elaborate on it. This is what you wrote. It says, "My back is against the wall. I can't think. I can't focus at home or at work. I'm an emotional wreck. My family thinks I'm a pillar of the community, the perfect husband, perfect dad, leader in the community and at church. On the outside, everything appears to be great. I take my family to church, I work hard, and I earn a decent living. I go to my kids' ball games, concerts, parent-teacher meetings, and I lead family devotions. The reality is that I'm a fraud. On the inside, I'm crumbling. I'm in disbelief that my shaky house of cards hasn't come tumbling down. I've told so many lies and made so many bad decisions over the last 20 years that I'm filled with remorse, regret, guilt, and shame. I'm so embarrassed that I have sworn I'd take my sick secrets to the grave. If people really knew what I was like, fear is my prevailing emotion. I could lose my wife, my children, my reputation in the community, and my church. Truth be told, I'm just sick of myself. I'm exhausted, looking at myself in the mirror every morning, knowing that I have no integrity. On one hand, I know I have to change, and on the other hand, I'm petrified to do so. Quite simply, I am disgusted with myself, with living a duplicitous life. How can I get out of living this divided life?" Like I said, Brian, I think a lot of men, I could relate to that. Could you tell us a little bit more about that, and how did you go about righting the ship? Because obviously you were there, but you're not there now. What happened?
Wow, that's a simple question. No, how did I get about riding the ship? You know, it wasn't like one day I woke up and looked in the mirror and said, "Hey, I got to do something about this." It was more like 1,000 days in a row looking in the mirror and not liking who I was seeing looking back at me. And being pretending like everything was okay, saying that I was a man of faith and a man of integrity, and knowing on the inside that I was just wearing this mask. And eventually, I just got so sick of myself. I didn't get found out. I didn't get caught. I was just so tired of myself and sick of myself. There were three really important things that happened for me. And I think this is universal, regardless of whether a dad is dealing with a really serious problem or just something that maybe is mildly irritating. The first thing was I got honest. I got honest with myself, and I got honest with a couple of men who I knew I could trust. Second thing was, I was going down a road I had never been down before, and I needed help. And so I got some good counseling from two different places, one about the whole effects of lust and pornography, and the other about relationships when they come tumbling down. And the third thing was, you know, I was pretty arrogant. I had a big ego. A lot of pride was holding me in place. And by getting honest and being accountable and getting help, a spirit of humility began to just wash over me. So I got honest, I got help, and I got humble. And in a nutshell, if I could have any man do those three things, this would be a better world, Joe.
You know, and Brian, I'm going to endorse what you just said and second that, because the listeners out there who've been listening to our show for any length of time know my testimony, my story, that my marriage ended because I wasn't those three things that you just said: honest, looking for help, and humble. And so I didn't come clean. I had to be found out. And it cost me a 16-year marriage / 20-something year relationship with a woman that I loved. And I wish now I could go back. And it's funny because I share the same things with guys now that even with our organization, I said, they said, well, Joe, what kind of men are you guys looking for to help? I said, we're looking for a humble. Now, the only word I changed was when it says the help, I said humble, honest, and hungry.
Motivated.
Hungry,
yeah.
Hungry for help, basically what you're saying, yeah. is yeah. that they recognize that, you know what, I'm tired of being this way. And I'm ready now to do whatever it takes. I'm hungry enough to say, you know what, I'll do whatever it takes to right this ship, to do it the right way. But thanks for sharing that with us, because that just validates what I now see now in hindsight that I could learn from. But Jeff, your dad mentioned that when he came clean and was coming to you and your sister, you were mad that you were angry and you started isolating yourself. And obviously he had broken the trust in the family. But honestly, how difficult was it for you to trust him again? Because I know there's guys out there who think, man, these wounds could never heal, that this relationship could never be mended or fixed. What did that process look like for you? I know it's gonna be different for every man, but what did that process look like for you and him rebuilding that trust? Was it really, really difficult? How did it work out for you?
It was extremely tough, and I was extremely confused though also. Early teenage years, I vividly remember sitting in the living room, and when my dad told the story and what's going on, and seeing my mom crying, it was less about what is he saying. It's more about why is he hurting my mother this way? Mm-hmm. At 14, 15 years old, you know, I'm with my buddies, hanging out with my buddies, and they're showing me their dad's pornographic, collections or these posters behind the door or whatever. So for me, it was like, well, isn't this what dads do? I didn't know. And the more that I saw how bad it hurt my mom, our family, my dad sleeping on the couch for months, them not talking, not communicating in that same way, that's where it started for me to be like, oh, this is a lot more serious than I thought. And then, at first it was, I saw my dad come home from, recovery program meetings, and he would sit down with me and, hey, let's talk about this. Hey, let's talk about this. And for me, it was, okay, well, is he just trying to fulfill his homework assignment from the program, or is he truly serious? Is he truly serious about trying to, rebuild this relationship? And day after day, talk after talk, month after month, year after year, it took a lot of hard work. And, now myself growing up, and newly, soon to be married, I'm learning how important conversations are and expressing your emotions and being vulnerable, because that's how relationships are truly built.
And Jeff, I love the fact that you mentioned, and you're probably not even aware of it, but I'm hoping men catch on to it. You will use words like months, years, that kind of thing. Because Brian, I want you to jump in here, because I know, and we talk about this a lot on the show when we've had other guests here, but I don't think it can be expressed enough. Brian, I want you to speak to that man out there who has caused some damage, has hurt the people he loved the most. Didn't do it intentionally, but it happened. But he's thinking, when will they ever forgive me? When can we get back to normal? I said, I'm sorry. And I'm really remorseful. And I want us to get back to the way things used to be. When are they going to trust me again? You know what I'm talking about, Brian, that man who's impatient about the healing process that their loved ones have to go through. I used to be that man, too, as well. What do you say to him?
Well, a couple of things. One, how does one find the courage to do what needs to be done when you know by doing that it's going to bring a load of pain and suffering onto the people that you love. And so, honestly, the most terrified day of my life was probably the most important day of my life, and that is when I got honest with my spouse. And a lot of men are constantly looking at, I'm in trouble, I made a mistake. It's kind of like if you're stuck in the mud and you just keep looking at that tire going, I'm stuck. You have to stop looking at why you're stuck, and you have to stop asking what's wrong, and you have to start asking what's possible. What do I want my life to look like in 1 year? And if that's the case, then what's next? And for me, I finally came down to, I cannot live my life like this any longer. I don't want to be a 60 and 70 and 80 year old man still carrying all these secrets and not having integrity. And I knew that I was going to put my marriage at risk, but I also believed to the core of who I was that my wife deserved to know what kind of man she was married to. And I also believed John 8, when Jesus said, the truth will set you free. You'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. And a few verses later, Jesus said, and if the Son sets you free, he's talking about himself, if the Son sets you free, you'll be free indeed. And it wasn't easy, but it was the right thing to do. And that led to some difficult days, but then it led to many, many wonderful days. You know, think of how many years you've been hiding this secret. Well, if you've been investing all that time in cheating or lying or conniving, well, you got to invest that much time in making it all right. Because you know that Jenga game with all those wooden blocks? The very bottom one says trust on it. And if you mess with that trust block, the entire thing will come down in a crash. And so you have to start over from ground one. And patience, and stick with it, you know. The easy things in life don't come easy. I mean, that's why Jeff and I, we have an entire chapter in the book on the importance of failure and how important failure is in our life.
You know, I look back now, and now what I advise men and coach men on that I've learned now from looking back at my life is that you got to take your watch off.
Yeah, great.
That watch has to go off, man. And you, I think you said it perfectly, Brian, is that look how long we lived in deception. Look how long we battled secretly. Kept secrets, misrepresented the truth. And if you look at the length of time, because that didn't happen overnight either. And look how long it took for us to come out of that. And so we got at least at the minimum expect it's going to take that long for the healing. But I mean, it's gotten to a point I tell men now, I said, if it never gets restored, you stay faithful to God because he has held you together over all that time. You know, and I think that for us as men, I get it. That's why I love talking to men and working with, because I understand that impatience and walking through it. But Brian, you're spot on, man. You're spot on that it's going to take time.
There's something a little bit different in Jeff and my relationship than some other fathers and sons. And that was, I was in the house. I did help him with his homework. I did play ball with him and taught him how to throw a ball and shoot a basket and all that stuff. So we already had a long track record of good things, but then I really threw a bomb on it, you know. And some fathers and sons, they don't have that track record to start out. So we did have a foundation there. And there was a day about 3 months, 4 months after I had shared all of this with my kids, and Jeff came to me and he said, I'm still really angry with you, but I know now why you said what you said. You couldn't have ever had integrity if you hadn't gotten honest with us. And that was a really mature thing for a 14-year-old boy to say.
You know, it's, man, I tell you, hindsight, because my son had a similar conversation with me, too, that he's, because I asked him, I said, you know, Kendall, are you mad? Are you angry? He said, yes. And I told him, I said, you don't have to apologize for being angry or mad at me. I said, you have a right to those feelings. I said, I just want you to keep talking to me about it. You know, and he had to process his anger in a way that was healthy for him. And it was through through communication, as opposed to him, you know, internalizing it and act, because he didn't. I mean, he praised the Lord. He didn't act out at school. You know what I mean? He didn't start getting bad grades. He didn't start using drugs or anything. But I was the dumping ground for him. And I was a safe place for him to say, Dad, I'm angry and I'm mad at you. But I want men out there to listen. And Brian, you can attest to it. That is not the end of the world. Matter of fact, it's the beginning of rebuilding.
Absolutely.
To be honest with you like that.
Absolutely.
Jeff, I don't want to ignore you, man, but I want to bring you back in here. I'm shifting a little bit because I just thought this was so interesting. In chapter two of the book, Jeff, your dad mentioned that the pursuit of happiness is killing society. And I've had this debate with many Christians, including my own family members, because I agree with your dad. But initially, you said that you didn't agree with your dad. Now, as a young man, what changed your mind and what would you say to millennials concerning this viewpoint today?
I think we're so caught up in what society and the norm, I guess, wants of us. And that's winning trophies and how many points you score or, you know, how many likes you get on social media. But that's not it. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, and the more that I looked into the Latin phrase Imago Dei, you know, and you're made in the image of God. And it's not about the trophies and the points or the wins or the losses. It's not about based on the size of your social media. You're unique, you're valued, you're respected, you're loved because God created you in that way. And I think that we... You know, we talk about it in a few chapters later, is we almost drink this Kool-Aid of what society wants over what God wants.
You know, because, and Brian, you brought it up in the book, and Jeff responded to it. But based on what you went through with Kim and your marriage and how tough that was to kind of restore that, a lot of marriages don't make it because of that, quote, pursuit of happiness. Was that what inspired you to write that section in the book? Because you didn't have to include that in the book.
You know, about 6 years ago, a couple who are friends of my wife and I, we've been friends with them for 25 years, they got divorced and they invited us over their house to tell us this. And he said to me, he said, I just want to be happy. And I said, I think you have the wrong goal right now. I don't think happy is what God is intending for you. I think steadfast and diligent and faithful, which means hard right now on the horizon, you know, short-term pain. Jeff and I use this all the time. Short-term pain is long-term gain. And the opposite is also true. Short-term gain usually means long-term pain. And that's true whether it's in exercise or diet or your relationships with your family. And so...
And Jeff mentioned that he's in the book that says not about being happy, but about being whole. Jeff, elaborate a little bit on that, man.
Well, something that I have actually written on my mirrors is, you know, in one of the books that I love, Burn Your Goals, he talks about live by principles, not rather than feelings. And feelings is you want to be happy. Feelings is what fulfills you immediately. Wholeness is about what are your principles, what are your values, what are your pillars of life that you walk with. And I think it's more of a, are you looking for the instant immediate gratification over, you know, something else I talk a lot about is do what's right, not what's easy.
You know, because I see that this desire and this pursuit of happiness, it struck a chord with me, Brian, when I read it, because I see that as a stumbling block to a lot of us, not just men, but women as well. And in marriages, if I had a dollar for every time a man or a woman told me they're getting out of a marriage because they think they deserve to be happy. can you imagine the day we stand before God and God says, that's what you guys thought I did. You thought that my son died to make you happy, for you to be happy. So you guys really missed the point.
You could all listen to Pharrell Williams' song, Happy, and go to hell listening to Happy.
I tell you. But I just thought that was interesting. And I'm glad that you guys tackled that and talked about that in the book. Because I'm thinking it wasn't necessarily needed to be part of the book, but I'm glad that you guys addressed it. Now, Brian, you mentioned in the book that every boy needs roots, rituals, and rites of passage. Could you explain to us the importance of each? I like how you explained it in the book.
In order for a boy to grow into a man and have a sense of identity that's secure, sound, emotionally, spiritually, even physically, I believe they need to experience certain things with their dad and other men as well. And to see men go through these things of growing and communicating about really important things in life. And so I was fortunate. I was raised on a farm, and my mom and dad were still alive for most of Jeff's life, where we would go to the farm frequently. And we did things like learn how to work on motors, learn how to drive a tractor, learn how to start a fire, chase cows, shoot a gun safely, you know. And we hike and go into the woods. And so these are sort of rite of passage activities that push a boy, challenge a boy. And when they go through them, they're like, wow, I did that. I can achieve. I'm stronger. I'm smarter. I'm braver because of that. And that's part of that one side of the coin of the tender lion. You know, that whole, there's a real paradox there between the term tender and lion. We did that very intentionally because I wanted Jeff. By the way, I'm 61 and Jeff is 31, okay, for those who don't know us. But I wanted Jeff to grow up to be a guy who was tough and decisive and a leader and outspoken. And I wanted him to be empathetic and kind and gentle and know when to be one and when to be the other.
You know, now you mentioned the rites of passage. Now, how do you distinguish that from the, quote, rituals and the roots that you say are needed by young men?
So I think that when you do these ritual kinds of things, camping, hiking, whatever, maybe it's running with your son, you know, and pushing them beyond certain comfortable limits, I think that develops strong roots in them. And then when the wind of society or social media or bad influences come at him, he's got roots and he can withstand that. He can withstand that strong force against him.
Right, right. Now, Jeff, concerning those roots and rituals and rites of passage, which of those do you think made the greatest impact on you as a young man and why?
I think it was rituals. I think that's actually a great question. I've never been asked that or thought about that. But, you know, we were a family and we had rituals for, you know, we talk about it still to this day, how important just sitting at the dinner table together was. And the holidays and celebrating birthdays, bringing, you know, our extended family with grandparents and cousins, and all that has a huge effect on now how me and my fiance look and plan for what our future wants to be. It starts kind of as a passage, which turns into the rituals, which then gets deeper and deeper into your roots. And so I'm extremely fortunate to have a childhood where, you know, even my mother said that she almost didn't want to go to church with my father during those times, but she did it because she wanted me and my sister to see us together in church together. And that's powerful. And I never knew that for years, but you did it because you wanted to show not the congregation, but you wanted to show me and my sister that this is what it takes for us to be a strong, loving family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to paint your mom, Kim, as being a saint, but Kim is a great example of showing that if she would wait till she was happy, you guys would never have gone to church together. But she did it. I mean, what a powerful statement you just made for her, that she's decided, I didn't want to, but I did, because she looked at the bigger purpose behind it. And you mentioned earlier, Brian, about having some great men in your life. When I was going through, even after going through the divorce, of them trying to help me to keep it together for my son, they had to constantly remind me of that. Joe, it's not about you feeling happy. It's about you doing the right thing by your son. And which meant treating my ex-wife with respect, even after the divorce, of being an example for him to see that. And so Kim sounds just like an amazing woman, because, Brian, she stuck by you through all this stuff. But at the same time, as she's going through her own hurt, she held the family together, man. That's a powerful, powerful thing.
You know, thank you, Joe. In the middle of all of our most difficult times, Kim and I still had conversations about, okay, how are we going to continue to be good in spite of how much conflict there is in the house, how are we going to continue to be parents to Jeff and Anna? I'll also say that phrase, it takes a village to raise a child. I always kind of poo-pooed that phrase until I got into this situation, because my wife was going through such a challenging time for several years, and it was her Christian women friends that surrounded her with listening and empathy and prayer. And they were saying, you know, Kim, the easy thing is to just leave, but you shouldn't be making this important of a decision when you're so angry. And they, because she didn't want to hear that from me at that time, because the trust was not good and the anger was there. And so, you know, I'm so grateful looking back that we shared our own challenges with about a half a dozen of our best friends. And they just surrounded us with real support and prayer and care during that time. And they also really cared for Jeff and his sister Anna, too, during that time.
You know, what a blessing, man. And Brian, again, you touched on such an important point. I'm hoping the men don't miss it. A lot of times when we've screwed up, we've messed up, and we're like, wow, we're trying to right the ship. And because we're going through our healing process. I'm talking about the men who are sincere. Like, you were sincere. You went to your recovery groups. You stay connected to your men. And a lot of times when we're going through that process, we're learning a lot about ourselves that we didn't know before. And God's revealing a lot of things about our hearts that he needs to mend and heal. So we're getting this waterfall of truths, and we can't wait to share with our wives, because we think it might fix them. You know, it might open their eyes and they can see that, wow, thank you for sharing that great truth with me, Brian. And now I understand, I get it. But my friends told me something similar to what you just said, in which Kim was very blessed to have those females in her life, because my friends were telling me, said, Joe, you're getting impatient with your ex-wife, because you're thinking, wow, why won't she listen to what I'm sharing as a truth? She said, she can't hear it from you. She can't. You're the source of the pain and the hurt. And so she can't hear that from you. She needs to hear it from a loving friend.
I hope your listeners are really listening to you, because there's tremendous irony in what you just said and a lot of truth in what you just said.
Yeah, that, when you said it, it jumped out at me. I'm thinking, I'm hoping they stop, pause, write this down. That is a power. I can't believe how stubborn I was not to get that. To say, it doesn't matter if Jesus gave you the answer in manuscript. She can't receive it from you.
Right. Yeah, there was a point. It was almost 3 years into a lot of conflict. And Kim and I we had gone to a conference together. It was actually, you probably heard of it, it's called Weekend to Remember.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we were in the middle of that weekend, and she said to me, she said, you know, I can see you're improving. I can see you're healthier, and I'm happy for you. She said, but I have to forgive you. And she said, it's not because of you. It's because of me. She said, my unforgiveness is holding me back. And there's a great quote by Anne Lamott that says, unforgiveness is like taking rat poison and expecting the rat to die.
Yeah.
And the unforgiveness is very toxic to the person that holds on to it. But she didn't want to hear that from me. She couldn't hear that from me. You're absolutely right about that.
And I hope a man get that. Boy, if they can get that, what it will do, it would give them more compassion. And it will also, with that key word you mentioned earlier in the show, Brian, patience, that is going to get to a point, it's not going to be soon, but eventually when they get the healing that they need, then they can listen to truth from you. But boy, we're the last people they want to hear truth from.
Amen.
When they're going through it. Yeah. And Jeff, we're going to get back to you in a second, but I want to bring up something that I also thought was really funny in the book, because being in men's ministry, we hear it all the time. And I love the chapter, Brian, where you talk about manning up. And you kind of turned the definition of how society defines manning up on his ear. Can you explain what manning up means to you?
Yeah. So ironically, you know, your listeners, they know you talk about manning up all the time. And that happens to be by double the longest chapter in the book. And so manning up is not ever using your strength to coerce someone, particularly a woman, to use your strength or your size to influence someone for you when it's bad for them. It's actually, there's a real paradox there. Manning up is actually about making sure you set boundaries, making sure you have a heart that's surrendered, making sure you use restraint, making sure you're faithful, making sure you take the high road. You're the first one to extend a hand. You're the first one to forgive. That's real leadership. And oftentimes that causes you to have to swallow your pride and to take the high road and to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, if you went on the street and you asked the average man, what is a real man? If you ask 10 guys, you're going to probably get 10 different answers. And so we're defining manhood based on society standard as opposed to God's standard of what manhood is. And all we have to do is look to the cross and look what Jesus was. He was the perfect example of a man. And like you said, you know, we sometimes they try to paint this picture as Jesus, as if Jesus was this passive person. But Jesus had strength, restrained, and he had a gentle side as well as a strong side. And there's a lot for us to learn from. But Jeff, I mentioned in the intro that you're the director of Powerhouse Hoops, a nationally known basketball academy in Arizona. And you work with young men all the time. When it comes to manhood, what do you see the scene? What do boys seem to be struggling with that you see the most when it comes to, quote, manning up, at least the ones that you work with?
I think it's support. I think that, it breaks my heart talking about this. I don't believe that there are productive, efficient enough role models in society. And, you know, I work a lot with the teenage boys. And let's be honest, when I was a teenager, and I'm sure when you were a teenager, you didn't listen a lot to what your father or your mother said. And I know that a coach is so important in a kid's life. And, you know, research shows that they need a comforting mentor for them and someone to believe in them to get them through their darkest hours. And it's how do we utilize basketball as a tool for life? And that's something that I say a lot to our coaches, that if you are so important to this kid and this child, whether he's a starter or whether he's one of the guys that sits the bench, you are extremely important to his potential impact on his life.
More than they ever know. Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. My wife and I do a program called Boys to Real Men. It's a 6-week boot camp. My wife is ex-military, ex-law enforcement, and she runs a fitness boot camp here in town. So she's the muscle behind all of this. But we put these kids through six weeks of torture. But at the same time, they get to do life with us as a couple. Because remember, I told you I wasn't exposed to a married couple, and you know, just one in 18 years of my life. So we spend a lot of time with them. We're talking about 3 times a week we're in their company, in their face. And what's interesting about it is I realized, and I was telling my son about it because my son loves the program. And I said, Kendall, you know what? I said, I thought being a dad, I had this thing figured out. And Jeff, you can speak to this because you work around young men all the time. I said to myself, you don't even have to be a great dad. You just got to be intentional and be present. That's all you got. Just you be know, there and be supportive.
Be there. And it, you know, it goes back to the chapter of Time Matters. And it goes back to, you know, I vividly, when I think of my relationship with my dad, I think of the 7 minutes that my dad would have before he would flip the burgers over for dinner on the grill, and he would put the burgers on the grill. He would set the timer for 7 minutes, and I would have 7 minutes to play catch, shoot hoops, throw the football, scrape my knees, whatever. But if I think of myself, that's what I remember when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. And that was what was important to me now looking back. So time matters. Truly.
Mm-hmm. Just yesterday, Jeff and I were saying, this is an original, Joe, but love is not spelled L-O-V-E with a boy. It's spelled T-I-M-E. You know, whether it's homework, music, sports, computers, to just be with that boy because they're watching you all the time. And also, I have a friend who's now deceased. His name was Herb Brokering, really wise guy. And he said to me once, he said, you know, the opposite of love is not hate. He said the opposite of love is lazy.
Ooh.
You know,
wow.
In the dictionary, they determine love as an intense feeling. Herb said, no, that's only part of it. Love has to be action. Love has to be seen. not just an intense feeling. Because I might intensely love my son, but if he never sees me,
yeah,
how will he know that?
Yeah.
So the opposite of love is lazy.
Oh, I love that, Brian. I love that. What a nugget. What a nugget. I'm gonna liberate that one. That is good.
Steal it all you want.
That is good. You know, I can't believe we're getting to the end of the show. But I want to ask a kind of lighthearted question before we get into a serious question. And I knew I was right. I didn't get to all the questions I wanted to get to on the show. But I really think that you guys gave us a lot of great info. But here's a lighthearted question, because I'm just curious about it. Because we're talking about you, Brian, you and Jeff writing this book together, collaborating. And we mentioned that you have two adult children. And Jeff's just one of them. And you have a daughter, Anna. How does Anna feel about you and Jeff teaming up to write this book? Does she feel left out?
She doesn't feel left out, because she's more introverted and Jeff is definitely more extroverted. And I mean, she is a strong, passionate woman in her own right. She teaches public school kids in Chicago. She's a PE teacher, just like her mom, a great, great teacher. So I think she's really proud of Jeff, and she's really happy, you know, that the book is getting some traction. I had both Anna and my wife read the draft of the book several times and said, you know, we're gonna turn our whole life inside out in this book. Are you okay with this? And they both said, well, you have to tell the truth. You just have to go forward with this, and hopefully it'll reach a lot of men and their sons.
And Jeff, I have a younger sister, just a year younger. I don't know if Anna's older or younger than you, but what you guys went through a very tough time together. How was your relationship with her during this time, in this process?
Oh, during the actual process, you mean of the book or?
Well, not the book. I'm sorry. More specifically with just the challenge, because you had your challenges being angry and mad and isolating. But we can't forget about her, too. She was going through her trials. But a lot. I know with my sister and I, we grew up in a very, very rough situation. And we were there for each other, even though we couldn't stand each other most of the time. But we were there for each other. I just want to know that kind of dynamic that you had with Anna.
No, Anna and I have always been best friends. And obviously we have our little tuffs and fights. But we've been best friends since ever I can imagine. It's, you know, I think like any family is, we learned how to communicate with each other. We learned how to talk as a family. And obviously it wasn't very easy, but just like anything is, you have to experience to learn through it, and you gotta have to get out of your comfort zone a little bit. But Anna has always been supportive, loving, caring, and brutally honest. I'll tell you that.
All right, so actually, chip off her old mom. That is awesome, Jeff. I'm gonna ask you one more question, then Brian, I'm gonna let you close it out with my last question, okay? And Jeff, obviously, you and your dad, and your sister, you guys have a great relationship now. And you and your mom, you guys have all gone through a metamorphosis, so to speak. But personally for you, what important lessons have you learned from your dad's life? I don't know, maybe your dad is hearing this for the first time, that you think will prepare you, because you mentioned earlier that you're engaged. I think your fiance's name is Brooke. Is it Brooke, right?
Yes, sir.
And that you guys are going to get married. What have you learned from your dad's life that you think has prepared you for being a husband and being a father in the future?
Two initial things that come to my mind is being vulnerable and being empathetic. Just you have to put yourself out there. You have to talk. You have to communicate. You have to tell your significant other or whoever's close to you. You have to tell them your true feelings. Whether it's going to hurt them or not, you know, it's truly important. One, no matter how bad a relationship can be, it can be mended by a lot of hard work. And, you know, I know my dad talked about it with John 8, is the truth will set you free is, you know, something that I'm learning is, you know, by facing that fear, it actually gives you freedom. And it almost unchains you or unleashes you from that demon or those secrets. And I've learned so much from my mom and my dad, both good and bad. But I think it goes back to vulnerability and empathy.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, man. And Brian, let's close this out, man. If there's one thing you hope that men and fathers could take away from the most from reading Tender Lions, what would it be?
This is a great question, Joe. In the thing that we're hiding right now, whether it's anger, maybe trauma, resentment, it's like we spend all of this emotional energy trying to pretend like everything's okay. People say, how's your day going? You're going, it's going great. And the reality is we're just using up all of this emotional energy trying to hide this thing down in the dark. When we get the courage to bring it out of the dark into the light and look at it for what it is, it disempowers whatever that demon is. And that's part of the truth setting you free. And you will find your greatest strength for the future in bringing whatever that issue is out of the dark and into the light. And it'll set you free to some marvelous days for the future. And that's what God wants for us, wow, to live life fully.
What a perfect way to close the show out. Man, that is perfect. Because if they don't remember anything else, if they remember that last comment, because that's what we truly want is, man, we want freedom. We want freedom. But like you said, Jeff, there's freedom can be found in facing your fear. It's amazing that that's where freedom is. Jesus had to face the fear of the cross to set us free. You know, so, man, you guys have been such a blessing. And, man, we've come to the end of our show. I can't believe it's that quickly. I knew we weren't going to get to the man up questions. But, guys, don't you worry. We'll be back and do it all again next week with a new guest and new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. But I like to thank my guests, Jeff and Brian Becker, for joining us on the show and being so gracious with their time. Guys, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us on Real Men Connect.
Thank you so much. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe. It's been just a blast, and blessings for all of your listeners out there. We'll pray for them and that they'll be the men that God wants them to be.
And we'll pray for continued blessings over you guys, too, and what your family is building, because you guys are building a legacy. And good luck to you and your marriage with Brooke, Jeff. We're praying for that as well. And Brian, for our listeners, if they want to find out more about you and your ministry and what you guys are doing in the book, because we keep talking about the book, what's the best way they can reach out and connect with you or get their hands on the book?
Sure. The website is tenderlions.org, tenderlions.org. They can contact us directly. They can find out more about the book. They can order the book. They could contact us if they'd like for us to be interviewed or to come and speak or just have a question. We'd love to hear from people.
Oh, that's fantastic. So, guys, you guys can reach out to them, even if it's to contact them individually with questions, or if you want to request, because I'm sure you guys go in as a team to go in to speak at places and churches too as well?
We will. We've not yet been asked to do that, but we're ready. We'd love to do that.
I'm hoping somebody out there listening, some pastor out there is thinking, we need to bring both of them, because I'm thinking Father's Day, your calendar should be filled.
We're ready.
We're going to hope and pray that that comes to pass as well. But thank you for sharing that. And we're going to put that in the show notes. That's tenderlions.org. We'll make sure that's in the show notes so you guys can reach out to Brian and Jeff. And guys, please do us a favor. This is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us, because it's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Dr. Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be that man that God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in his grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.